All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. So today we're going to be talking about the threat of nuclear war, what you should do to prepare, how to survive it, and what do our government officials say the possibility of nuclear war is. What are their hints to it? What are their ways that they are preparing for it? All this and more. Today's going to be an interesting show. We'll be back right after this message. Mountain State Survival covers your basis for your planning, prepping, evacuation, bugging in, or bugging out needs. They carry anything from educational material, camping supplies, emergency services supplies, food, first aid, survival kit and equipment, shooting gear, survival gear, tactical gear. They carry it all. They got it in stock. Give Mountain State Survival a ring. That's mountain-state-survival.com. Get this type of supplies while you still can. 304-517-6935. Mountain State Survival is one of the only places that I know of currently that is still carrying the delicious Peak Refuel meal that is ready to eat. It's personally the only thing that I eat at this point whenever I go out camping, whenever we have any type of emergency or disaster situation. That is the meal that I stick with, and you can find that at mountain-state-survival.com. Use Wrecker5 for a 5% discount on your overall purchase. That's Wrecker5, mountain-state-survival.com. Hey, welcome back to the American Vindicta Show. So, as you are aware, there's quite the talk of using nuclear weapons. Russia has threatened it. The United States has threatened it. NATO has threatened it. The UN has talked about it. China and Taiwan, North Korea, India, and Pakistan have all talked about it. We have local experts from the American politics that are weighing in on this question, saying what are the real threats, and our staff members in the Pentagon are currently deliberating what are some of the best options to use militarily against Vladimir Putin or potentially also against Xi Jinping in China if nuclear war does break out. Is mutually assured destruction still on the table? Will cooler heads prevail? We don't really know. Obviously, no one is trying to meet at the negotiating table right now. So, the only thing we can do, ladies and gents, is to stand back, stand by, train, prep, and pray. I would tell you to do your research on what it is that the current threat values are for nuclear weapons being used, and come up with your own speculative vision of this. But as it stands right now, let's just talk about the threat as it is. If it happens, what to expect? As someone who was a part of the federal government for 15 years, I would tell you that when I was in DHS, we did train on this a little bit. Not too much, because honestly, the threat wasn't really that high. The threat of a dirty bomb is actually much, much higher because of the availability and the means for the material and transportation of it. It's not giving off such a irradiated value that you can, you know, easily sense it with the sensors that are built in throughout various cities and police departments that are traveling up and down the roads that'll be able to, you know, possibly find a large nuke. But once again, a large nuke is very easy to find. The suitcase bomb created by the terrorists or the extremists, that has always been in the government mindset, at least to the standard that we were trained, was the biggest threat. I would welcome a dirty bomb over a nuclear attack. And I'm going to tell you why. But before we get into that, let's read up a little bit on a few things that are floating around out there. So we know that Russia and Ukraine have a conflict, a war. Putin doesn't want to call it a war. Everyone else in the world is calling it a war. I also call it a war. But if this goes nuclear, well, Poland just asked for the United States also to transport nuclear weapons to their territories. And I would believe that if a nuclear device does go off, Belarus is probably going to get attacked as well by NATO members, and maybe then some other secondary, tertiary allies of Vladimir Putin, and potentially then one of his military forces. I don't think we're going to risk nuking Vladimir Putin in the motherland. The reason why I say that is because the moment that happens, the dead hand switch goes off. And I don't think that device since the Cold War was ever removed. The dead hand is a Cold War era automatic nuclear weapons control system. It's similar in concept to the American AN/DRC-8, the Emergency Rocket Communication System. And that was originally constructed by the Soviet Union. It's also known as the Perimeter System. The system remains in use still in post-Soviet Russia. An example of the fail deadly and mutually assured destruction deterrence, it can automatically initiate the launch of the Russian intercontinental ballistic systems, ICBMs, and they will be sending towards a pre-entered highest authority order from the general staff of their armed forces. The Strategic Missile Force Management then talks to the command posts and the individual silos within where the ICBMs are housed. And if a nuclear strike is detected by either seismic activity, the amount of light like gamma ray, radio activity, and pressure sensors from the overpressure of a blast, even with all the commanding elements fully destroyed, if this monitoring system senses the seismic, light, radioactive, or pressure sensors going off, it will launch every one of their intercontinental ballistic missiles to pre-designated stations. By most accounts, it is normally switched off and is supposed to be activated during times of crisis. However, as of 2009, it was said to remain fully functional and able to serve its purpose whenever needed. This thing was created in 1985. I ask you this simple question. Has that system been updated? the command and control computer modules have probably disintegrated at some point. So hopefully their system has been updated so that it can be, manually controlled and operated if need be, in case like some random thing happens. And, here's an interesting thing. I'm going to speculate this one for you. If the dead hand will automatically send these weapons, if it's turned on, if it's a seismic, a light activity, radioactivity, or pressure that was activating their sensors and launching these ICBMs, could that be done by a meteor strike? Could that be done by one of the rods dropped from one of our satellites, or by China doing that to Russia? and then making these sensors go off? Just a question. I don't know how accurate it is, but that's scary as hell to think. All right, so let's move on. So why did I bring up China? Well, I brought up China because, as it happens, Ukraine isn't the only place on the planet where a nuclear conflagration could erupt within the near future. Sad to say, around the island of Taiwan, where the United States and Chinese forces are engaging in ever more provocative military maneuvers. Just recently, the Marines were invading or practicing the amphibious invasion and landing onto some contested islands within that area. There is an increasing risk that such moves by both the United States and China could lead to a nuclear escalation. While neither America nor Chinese officials have explicitly threatened to use such weaponry, both sides have highlighted the possible extreme outcomes. When Joe Biden last spoke to Xi Jinping by telephone, that was July 29th, the Chinese president warned him against allowing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to visit the island of Taiwan. 4 days later, guess what she did? She visited the island of Taiwan. Xi Jinping said, "Those who play with fire will perish by it." He assured Joe Biden that an ambiguous warning, to be sure, but one that nevertheless left open the possible use of nuclear weapons. Why is it that we keep pushing ourselves down this pathway? As if to underscore that point, on September 4th, the day after Pelosi met with the senior Taiwanese officials in Taipei, China, China fired off 11 Dongfeng 15, which is DF-15, ballistic missiles into the waters around Taiwan. Many Western observers believe that the barrage was actually meant as a demonstration of Beijing's ability to attack any U.S. naval vessel that might come to Taiwan's aid in the event of a Chinese blockade or invasion of the island. The DF-15 has a range of 600 miles. It's believed capable of delivering not only a conventional payload, but also a nuclear one. In the days that have followed, China also sent nuclear-capable H-6 heavy bombers across the median line in the Taiwan Strait, a previously respected informal boundary between Taiwan and China. Worse yet, the state-owned media displayed images of the Dongfeng 17 hypersonic ballistic missiles, also capable of carrying nuclear weapons, being moved into positions off of Taiwan. Now, Washington, D.C. has not overtly deployed nuclear-capable weaponry in such a brazen fashion near the Chinese territory, but it certainly has sent aircraft carriers and guided missile warships into that area, into the contested seas, saying that its ability to launch attacks on the mainland should a war break out is there. I don't know exactly where we stand pound for pound with China militarily, but I want to say that we have the upper hand. We have to have the upper hand. But then again, how much of our military secrets have been sold to the Chinese, and how much have they created themselves? Who knows? China always says some of the most off-the-wall, ambiguous, foolhardy military statements about their military. And you know, China is a bully, right? China is an international bully. And so is the United States. But we do it right. Unlike the bully who walks around threatening to beat everybody up and take your lunch money, and how awesome they are and how bad it'll be. America just does it. We just beat you up and take your resources, and what are you going to do about it? You know, oh, by the way, you're welcome for your freedom. That's been America's geopolitical strategy for the past 50 or 60 years. Here's some things we need to move on about. In terms of nuclear weapons, I think the possibility of them being used in the United States is actually high. I think that the United States could see a bombardment of nuclear weapons. I think that'll mostly hit the East Coast. There will be some places in the West Coast, strategic locations, obviously. Probably the Miramar Navy Base. Pearl Harbor will probably be wiped off the map, along with Guam. Washington State will get hit because that's where a Ranger Battalion is. The Marine Corps will get hit in 29 Palms and probably Camp Pendleton. You know, if you're going to nuke, you need to nuke your enemy's military. It doesn't really help to nuke the civilian populace, especially if you want to come over and take over the country and take over our resources. You're going to need the labor. You're going to need the people to work the fields. And what better than to make Americans do that? And also, one of the reasons why I don't think they would hit the West Coast as heavily as the East Coast is that the technological firms are all on the West Coast, Silicon Valley. If I was going to invade America, I would not destroy Silicon Valley. I would want to seize every asset there. Not everything there, China has had its little claws in. So the ability to get any type of R&D properties, you know, that's what they'll be doing. There's some other strategic locations that I think China would want, obviously. I don't think this is ever talked about too much, but I don't think China would, I don't think they would nuke Area 51 or the possibility of S4. You probably know why. If, and this is a big if we really do have extraterrestrial properties, if we actually do have craft, if we actually do have bodies, as Bob Lazar has stated that we do, I know that if it were me, we are not nuking that. We are going to take that. And we'll kill every last man, woman, and child in that area to take that, because that will put you on the supreme level of the rest of the world with technology. However, and war sucks, folks. That's just the reality of it. When one country comes to invade the other, all people of all age groups, all sexes, all races, and all genders will perish in nuclear fire if need be. I think another reason why China would not want to overwhelmingly nuke America is because a lot of the fat cats in China will want to move to America. America is really big. And there's still a lot of rural areas. There are also in China, but I think a lot of these Chinese officials would want to carve out their own place in America. Do you think in Area 51 that we would launch one of these R&D test vehicles, one of these flying saucers we've heard so much about, the TR-3Bs that go invisible? Do you think that would be part of our deterrence? Well, let me ask you an even better question. Before the nukes fall, is that when the aliens come? Oh, have we jumped that far down the scientific rat hole? I hope so. I don't know about you guys, but I would prefer the aliens to come before we just happen to nuke ourselves into oblivion. Then again, I also don't believe the aliens are aliens, but we can save that story for another day. It really doesn't matter what you believe they are, by the way. It really does not matter at all what you believe the aliens are. They're not here for us. Not the way that you think. All right, so let's talk about a nuclear attack. I've segued enough. So, unlike a dirty bomb, and this is coming to you from DHS.gov, unlike a dirty bomb which disperses a radioactive material using conventional explosives, a nuclear attack is the use of a device that produces a nuclear explosion. A nuclear explosion is caused by an uncontrolled chain reaction that splits automatic nuclei in something called fission, nuclear fission, to produce an intense wave of heat, light, air pressure, and radiation. All the things that the dead hand switch in Russia are monitoring, all those sensors that they have. That's what they're monitoring, remember? Heat, light, air pressure, radiation. So with the intense wave of the heat, light, air pressure, radiation, it would be followed by the production and the release of the radioactive particulates, the particles that will get into everything, everywhere. For ground blasts, these radioactive particles are drawn up into what is called a mushroom cloud, with the dust and the debris producing fallout that can expose people at a great distance to the radiation. If you want to have a little fun history lesson, look up Bikini Atoll. Bikini Atoll. Bikini Atoll. Research that one. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the National Academies have teamed up in 2003 to produce fact sheets on chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear attacks designed to help better prepare the media for the types of threats facing the nation. The media. Did any of you receive any of these fact sheets? Just the media, huh? Each fact sheet provides a clear, concise information to the media and the public on the characteristics, the danger, and the consequences associated with various types of attacks. Each fact sheet has been through a rigorous peer review process that was evaluated by independent members of the National Academies, many of whom are recognized as the nation's foremost experts within their field. You can view this if you go to DHS.gov towards the publication library and you look up Nuclear Attack Fact Sheet. Now, there's some other things to get into on this. What are some of the other things that we should be paying attention to this? Well, for one thing, with weapons of mass destruction, the blast wave and the amount of death and carnage would be the next part to talk about. And the nuclear weapons project at MIT.edu has this to say about it. Blast wave effects calculator. Now, this was wrote by Jean M. Bell, Physics Department Laboratory for Nuclear Science at MIT. And it's a blast model that's actually a website. And it has a simulation that's showing the destruction damage that the nuclear weapon can inflict on human structures at a ground level, low and high altitude explosions. And there's going to be a new map simulation coming soon to it. But the blast effects are usually measured by the amount of the overpressure, the pressure in excess of the normal atmospheric value, which is measured in pounds per square inch, or PSI. So, the atomic bomb dropped in Hiroshima during World War II, its yield was 15 kilotons. Some 70,000 people probably died as a result of the initial blast and the heat and the radiation effects. Nearly every structure within 1 mile of ground zero was destroyed. Almost every building within 3 miles was damaged. So, if you live in a major downtown area, and you live in one of those cool condo high-rises or in apartments, I want you to look out, and for about as far as your eye can see structures, there would be none. What a strange sight. The atomic bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki was bigger. It was 20 kilotons. Of the 52,000 homes that were in Nagasaki, 14,000 homes were destroyed, and 5,400 other homes were seriously damaged. It will never be known for certain how many people died as a result of the atomic attack on Nagasaki. The best estimate is around 40,000 people who died initially, with 60,000 more that were injured. By January 1946, the number of deaths probably approached close to 70,000 in Nagasaki, with perhaps ultimately twice that number dead within 5 years. Today, some of the most powerful nuclear weapons yield over 1,000 kilotons, which is almost 660 more times powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. To drive this home a little more, our current president, Joe Biden, is from Delaware. We also have an Air Force base that's in Dover. So, let's say if the Chinese or the Russians wanted to drop a nuclear bomb on the president's old hometown somewhere near Wilmington, you would have the eastern side of Maryland, the northern part of Delaware, and then the western part of New Jersey, and then part of the southern part of Pennsylvania. And I think that's up there near Chester. All damaged by a nuclear blast, irradiated, destroyed. And that's if they used just a low-yield nuke. If they used a nuke, guys, that was 60 kilotons, 100 kilotons, that blast radius gets a lot bigger. And then that secondary zone gets a lot bigger. See, with nuclear attacks, we have three different zones. You have a hot zone, a warm zone, and a cold zone. This is the way law enforcement is trained on this. The hot zone is going to be where the nuclear blast actually took effect. The warm zone is going to be where the blast radius went out. So with some of these places, if the blast radius went 3 miles away of buildings still being damaged, well, that's your warm zone, 3 miles away from the center. And then your cold zone, that's going to be where first responders are going to be gathering, medical, law enforcement, military, intelligence, and also the media, and then all the onlookers. for those of us who were trained in it, who would have to be geared up in certain a certain level hazmat suit to travel all the way into where they got, you know, as close to the hot zone as possible to estimate the damage. And I briefly worked with my guys that were in the weapons of mass destruction section. And that was one of the scariest things that we always talked about was a nuclear blast and then going into the different zones. Because you would be walking into three different worlds. You know, with the cold zone, it's the world as it is. And then the warm zone, you start to walk into the destruction and you're getting your rad meters going off, most likely, because of the ionizing radiation that's still within the air and all the materials and objects. And as you're walking, you're kicking all this stuff up and you're dispersing it all over the place. And so the further you walk into the warm zone, approaching the hot zone, the more the destruction you're going to see. You'll probably still see fires and smoke, but you're going to start seeing different levels of destruction upon the human body and animals, upon the environment, upon the trees, the grass, the water. Everything is going to drastically change, and it's going to become more hellish with every step towards the center where the blast is. Whoever is within that area that survives will never be the same, not mentally and not physically. And then the ability to try and evacuate people, because that is part of the goal, is to find survivors to evacuate. Everything has to be decontaminated. Everything. Everything has to be hard bristled brushed, sprayed down to get all the ionizing particles off of you. And then you go through the, you know, gross amounts of the radiation, anti-radiation therapy. Most people aren't going to survive it. Even if they survive the blast, most people are not going to survive it. And those who do survive it, who do have children, the children will have mutations, because this is what was shown with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, the level of terror that this can cause the psyche alone was one of the most effective parts of having nuclear weapons. Watch some of the videos, look at some of the old pictures, look at the aftermath of Hiroshima, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But, you know, as far as targets, if they don't take on military targets and they chose to aim at cities, what would they do? Would they aim at the capitals? Because if they did, Austin, Texas, you're gone. But they'd probably also aim for Dallas or Fort Worth. Maybe Houston, hit the oil refinery areas. Baton Rouge, you're gone. Jackson, Mississippi, you're on the list. Same for you, Little Rock and Oklahoma City. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Phoenix, Arizona. Sacramento. Carson City, Nevada. Salt Lake City. Denver. Well, Colorado, you're screwed in the event of a nuclear attack, because they're probably going to hit your state with five different nukes. Cheyenne, Wyoming, Helena, Montana, Boise, Idaho, Salem, Oregon, Olympia, St. Paul, Minnesota, Bismarck, North Dakota, all these places, these are your capitals. They're on the list. They got a nuke aimed at them. Des Moines, Iowa, Jefferson City, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois, Madison, Wisconsin, Lansing, Michigan, Indianapolis, Indiana, Columbus, Ohio, Frankfort, Kentucky, Nashville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Montgomery, Alabama, Tallahassee, Columbia, South Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina. Every one of y'all have a nuke aimed at you. Virginia, you're gone. They're going to destroy Virginia because that's where DC's at. West Virginia, Charleston, maybe you'll survive. Probably not. The fallout alone will just cascade the entire Black Mountain area. Albany, New York. They may not even know what Albany, New York is. They'll probably just aim for New York City. Augusta, Maine. I don't know. I don't think half of Americans even know that Maine is a state. Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Trenton. God, do the world a favor and hit Trenton. I shouldn't say that, but your crime rate's out of control, Trenton. Look, these are all the threats. These are all the targets. Everyone listening to me, for the most part, lives in one of those places. It's, I don't know, we're talking about damage that we don't have a skill, really, for understanding. But if you go to the Radiation Emergency Medical Management, rim.hhs.gov, you can actually look up some of the damage zones after a nuclear detonation and all the idealized maps on them. So let's talk about the three layers of the damage. So the way they have this wrote out is light damage, moderate damage, and severe damage. And these are the three zones. Light damage zone. This damage is caused by shocks similar to those that are produced by a thunderclap or a sonic boom, but with much more force. Although some windows may be broken over 10 miles away, the injury associated with the flying glass shards would generally occur at overpressures above 0.5 psi. This damage may correspond to a distance of about 3 miles from ground zero for a 10 kiloton nuclear explosion. The damage in this area will be highly variable, as shockwaves rebound multiple times off of buildings and the terrain and even the atmosphere. So let me talk about the damage from flying projectiles. With part of what I did when I worked for Homeland Security is we... How do I explain this carefully? We assess the threats towards federal entities. And part of this is actually a blast mitigation process. So with that, if the building rated it based off of a certain threat value, then what we would do is we would tell them that, hey, you know, the Interagency Security Committee, ISC, says that you're supposed to have blast mitigation properties. So what that means is, they should have a structure strong enough to withstand the overpressure of the blast from either suicide vehicular bombs or vehicular bombs or even something such as this with a nuclear attack. But one of the things that we tell people always, it's always a good recommendation to have, is to have the blast curtains on windows. So, and this is something your average home, your average building, your average corporation's not going to have stuff like this, but these blast curtains were meant to catch the flying jagged knife shards of glass from when the pressure of the blast explodes. It goes into that glass, and then that glass explodes into your face in the building. And I mean, you know, It also depends on what type of glass you have within your windows. One of the reasons why we recommend people have at least thermally plated glass or higher than that, double pane, triple pane windows. But if you have just regular annealed windows, just a regular old thin, crappy window, the moment an overpressure happens, that glass is flying at you at hundreds of miles an hour, and they're just large flying knives. Think of it like that. Okay? A lot of damage can happen. All right? A lot of damage probably to the face, the hands, the throat, the chest, because that's typically where the glass is going to be flying at. So, you know, for preparations for stuff like this, one of the things that I would tell you to do if you were actually worried about this, or let's just say, ladies and gentlemen, that when the time comes that you need to be prepared for that, cover your glass windows. Cover your glass windows with either towels. I would just take towels and I would nail them around the windows. That way, if there is any type of explosion, if you believe for whatever reason you live within the vicinity of where a blast may happen because you live close to one of these cities or you live close to a military installation, that's a cheap way to go about, you know, hopefully catching that. But you would want to make sure that it is nailed all four corners as many times as possible around every window just to catch those flying glass shards. Because if you're within this light damage zone, that's going to be probably one of the most dangerous things, is the flying debris. As a responder, as a first responder, as we move inwards, windows and doors will be blown in gutters. Window shutters, roofs, and lightly constructed buildings will probably have a lot of damage. Litter and rubble will be increased moving towards the ground zero, and there will be an increasing amount of numbers of stalled and crashed automobiles that will be making it very hard for emergency vehicles to pass through to the next layer of zones. So, then you have the blast overpressures that characterized the light damage zone. And these are calculated to be about 0.5 PSI at the outer boundary and 2 to 3 PSI at the inner boundary. More significant structural damage when the PSI goes up. More significant structural damage to the buildings will indicate entry into the moderate damage zone. All right, so once again, we're talking about the layers of the warm zone, okay? And the light damage zone, the moderate zone, and then the hot zone, all right? So these the light damage and the moderate damage, this is all what we were calling earlier the warm zone, all right? That's the different passages as you're walking through. You're seeing the environment change dramatically because of the layer of destruction. So as you enter into the moderate zone, first responders may expect that they are transitioning into the modern zone when the building damage becomes more substantial. This damage may correspond to a distance of about 1 mile from ground zero for a 10 kiloton nuclear explosion. This determination is made by the ground level and or the overhead imagery. Observations within this moderate damage zone includes significant structural damage, blown out building interiors, blown down utility lines. You'll be seeing overturned automobiles, caved in roofs on houses, some collapsed buildings, and probably structural fires. Some telephone poles and streetlight poles will be blown over. In this moderate damage zone, sturdier buildings, reinforced concrete, will probably still be remaining. Lighter commercial and multi-unit residential buildings may be fallen or structurally unstable, and most wood frame homes will be completely leveled. Substantial rubble and crashed and overturned vehicles, flipped over vehicles, will be viewed in the streets, and that's to be expected, which makes evacuation and the passage of rescue vehicles much more difficult or maybe even impossible without street clearing equipment. I would imagine that you would have to have tracked vehicles or large, heavy industrial grade construction vehicles to probably move most of this stuff. Now, as you move towards Ground Zero, walking through the MD zone, the moderate damage zone, rubble will completely block the streets, and it's going to require heavy equipment to clear. And the more time deliberates here, the more time we have to navigate through these obstacles and make a clear pathway, the less time it's going to be for us to get to people who are hurt. And you may be within this blast area and you may be alive, but severely hurt. So once again, this is why preparing properly with food, water, batteries, flashlight, radio, medical stuff, you know, that's why it's very, very important to keep this stuff on hand. And once again, we used to say for the most unlikely events like a nuclear blast, we used to say that. Now we're telling you to get ready for it. What a strange world. Within the medium zone, broken water, gas, and electrical and communication lines are going to be visibly seen, and probably fires will be encountered coming out of the natural gas lines. Many casualties in the moderately damaged zone will survive. These survivors, in comparison to survivors in the other zones, the more extreme and the more light zones, will benefit most from urgent medical care. So that means that if you are caught within this moderate zone, you are most likely going to need emergency surgery. Why is that? Because it's going to be as similar as to people who've been caught up in a Category 4 or Category 5 tornado. You're going to have people that are going to probably be impaled by objects, have large lacerations, fractures, multiple fractures, concussed, people that are unconscious, quite possibly have people that have drowned in their basements because they can't get out after a house has collapsed on them and water lines have broke. Blood loss. You know, that's why it's so important to be training and prepping for stuff like this within the government, you know, local, state, and federal. It's for this emergency response. But, you know, the looting is also going to be happening at the same time. So just remember that. Keep your security on hand. There's going to be a number of hazards. And these are all going to be expected within this medium zone, including elevated radiation levels and potentially live down power lines, ruptured gas lines, unstable structures, sharp metal objects, broken glass, ruptured vehicle fuel tanks that are probably going to be also on fire, fuel stations that have been structurally damaged that are now leaking out fuel. Visibility in much of the medium zone will be limited for an hour or more after the explosion because of the amount of dust that's going to be raised in the air by the shockwave and from the collapsed buildings. And smoke from fires will probably continue to obscure the visibility for a number of hours afterwards. Blasts from overpressures that characterize the medium zone are an outer boundary, and that's about a 2 to 3 psi, and the inner boundary is a 5 to 8 psi. So 2 to 3 psi on the outer boundary, that is between the light zone and the moderate zone, And then when you enter into the moderate zone towards the middle and then closer to the other boundary between the moderate zone and the severe zone, the amount of the PSI that was caused by the overpressure is going to increase. And with that number increasing, so does the damage. All right, so let's talk about the severe damage zone. Few, if any, buildings are going to be expected to be structurally sound or even left standing in the severe damage zone. And very few people will survive. However, some people will be protected within these stable structures like subterranean parking garages or subway tunnels. But at the time of the explosion from the initial blast, anyone on the surface is going to be dead. There's going to be very high radiation levels that are going to prompt, and you're going to have residual origin and all the other hazards, like the amount of dust, the particulate dust that's going to be in the air, choking dust. These hazards are going to be expected within the severe damage zone. Fire is going to be there. Significantly increased risk to survivors and responders. Responders are probably going to enter this zone with very, very great caution, only to rescue known survivors, not to go in and search. So that means if you did survive that damage zone, the severe damage zone, the hot zone, the blast site, if you survived it and you cannot signal for help, help is not coming, not in time. And every single person within the severe damage zone is going to need, most likely, urgent medical care. There's going to be rubble in the streets, and there's probably going to be enough rubble in the streets that the severe zone is going to be impassable to make any type of timely response by a vehicle. It's going to be completely impractical. Approaching ground zero, all buildings will be rubble, and rubble may be 30 feet deep or more. The severe damage zone may have a radius on the order of half a mile for a 10 kiloton detonation. And that is something that's still smaller than what was dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And the blast overpressure that characterizes the severe damage zone is of 5 to 8 PSI and greater. So, you know, this is not a low yield nuke, but a 10 kiloton detonation half a mile from the original ground zero blast site is going to be what they estimate 30 feet of rubble. 30 feet deep of rubble. So before we leave, I just want you to consider how serious it is whenever I tell you that mutually assured destruction should not be on the table, because there's not one intercontinental ballistic missile that has a 10 kiloton warhead. They're all above that. So just imagine everything I just told you, from the light, the moderate, to the severe zones, being exponentially worse in ways that we can't describe yet. And And the and this is a medical nightmare, by the way, for any of you medical professionals who've never trained in this. I've had some training in this, dealing with the dangerous fallout zones and all that. I just want to briefly talk about this, the radiation triage, treat, and transportation system, the RTR, after a nuclear detonation. And these are the venues for the medical response now. So, RTR-1, these are the sites, these sites would have victims with major trauma and relatively high levels of radiation. This limits responder time and would be associated with relatively severe victim injuries. Many victims may be expectant. The location will be near the severe damage zone and the external border, or into the moderate zone of where the moderate zone and the severe damage zone meet. And just the sheer amount of rubble alone may prevent entry into this area for medical professionals. Then you have RTR-2. The sites will be for triaging victims with radiation exposure only, or possibly with minor trauma. The location will be along the outer edges of the dangerous fallout zone and the light damage zone, and will have some elevated levels of radiation. Most victims are expected to be ambulatory, which means walking. Then you have RTR-3. And these sites are collection points where radiation is not present. That is your cold zone. All right, that's your cold zone. This is where radiation is not present and will allow occupation for many hours or more. Victims are anticipated to have limited trauma, such as glass injury, and most victims will be ambulatory or walking, including people that are displaced by the explosion who have no injury or exposure to radiation. Extensive self-evacuation is likely to be observed at these sites. These may occur in the light damage zone and beyond. RTR-3, these sites are likely to form in various locations spontaneously or by the direction of the incident commander who's on scene. As opposed to like the assembly center sites that are pre-planned, because within like every major city that I've read off to you, we have a plan of how to respond to every city based off the formula that I'm reading to you. And every city would have pre-designated safety fallout structures and assembly care centers. But all that can change depending on where the severe damage zone is and how severe it is. Changes in these fallout patterns, also due to wind shifts, may require some of the RTR sites to change roles to RTR-3 or RTR-2, or possibly be completely abandoned. And RTR-2, remember, those are people who are going to be triaged for radiation. So, you also have the medical care sites, which would include hospitals, healthcare facilities, and alternative care sites for those who need immediate medical care. So probably, you know, taking a mall or a high school or a Walmart and then quickly turning that into a casualty collection point. You have assembly centers, which are the collection points for displaced persons or missing persons, or those who do not need any immediate medical attention. And then you'll have the evacuation centers, which are organized strictly for transportation. Destabilization. That's what I want to leave you with. Everything that is happening right now is destabilizing. Joe Biden is destabilizing our country with his lack of coherent presidential-like conversations that he should be having with other world leaders. Joe Biden is trying to spark the fire of a nuclear annihilation. And I just read you the formula of how we're going to respond when it hits a city coming near you. So, you can check some of this stuff out on rem.hhs.gov. That's rem.hhs.gov. If you have any further questions about this, you can also go down and you can go over damage zones after a nuclear detonation, damage zones after nuclear detonation, the idealized map, the zone approach, rescue activities after a detonation, time sequence, size of dangers from the fallout, from the winds, all this stuff. If you don't know anything about it, I've learned about this years and years ago, but you can actually go on here and you can read about it yourself, and I strongly advise that you do. Test your city council if you ever get the chance. Test your law enforcement. See what they have in preparation for stuff like this. Now, obviously, law enforcement, sensitive stuff, you're not going to be told. But general evaluations for preparedness should be discussed with the civilian populace. Everybody needs to be on the same boat here because we're all going to be on the same boat. And it's all going to have fire on it, nuclear radiation, if they decide to nuke us. So, test your skill. Make sure you know the type of crap I just talked about. Honestly, if you really you don't know what to look at, just go to like nuclear fallout or nuclear attack on the U.S. And then just like dash DHS. DHS probably has some of the best stuff on there. And I will like to, you know, toot the horn a little bit for my former agency. The men and women that work there within the Weapons of Mass Destruction Agency are some of the foremost experts in the world. And these are people who are really trying to solve these problems, but they reach a lot of bureaucratic tape and get hamstrung. And there's a lot more that I think we could do as a country than just sending over billions and billions and billions of money over to Ukraine when we could be getting our nation prepared for this oncoming attack that apparently our politicians want to happen. So, that's all I got for you. Enjoy your day. I'll see you tomorrow. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to the American Vindicta Show. Train, prep, and pray, and stay frosty. The enemy's out there.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
all stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.